I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, as students all across the country prepare to walk out of school tomorrow, we're going to continue our community conversation about guns, gun violence, and student activism. My guests are Brandon Warren, a student activist, Tim Nation from the Peace Learning Center, where they work with young people on these topics, and Jane Henniger with the ACLU of Indiana. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today we're going to be talking about student activism, guns, and gun violence. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Brandon Warren, who is a student activist, Tim Nation from the Peace Learning Center, where they work with young people on these topics, and Jane Henniger with the ACLU of Indiana on students' rights ahead of the walkout. And I, at this point, have to do my sort of standard disclosure that I was one of Jane's predecessors as executive director of the ACLU of Indiana. We don't like to withhold anything from the audience. So now that we have done that, I think we're going to start this conversation, and I should welcome all of you to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, but I think youth should be served here. We're going to start the conversation with Brandon. Talk with us about your plans for tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Yes, for tomorrow, I'm a high school senior at Warren Central High School. My organization is in multitude of high schools, but my main focus is within my own high school. So I've kind of butted heads with my administration, and what we're going to do is we're going to allow the students to walk down to the hallways and join Unity by holding hands and with the social injustice song playing over the intercom. And then after that, we will follow that with a live panel involving our superintendent, chief financial officer, and chief of police of the schools, just so that 4,000 students walking outside the building not only could be a safety hazard, but we also know that we really want the students' voices to be heard. So we want the students to feed in live questions and comments and concerns to the panel that will be placed in between 10 o'clock and 10:17, so they can actually voice their concerns, voice their questions, and also we'll be there attending Senator Jing Bro, as well as Dr. Hampton from the mayor's office. So these students' voices will be heard tomorrow, and that's our expectation.
Brandon, I'm going to ask, would all 4,000 of the students walk out? Is there that great a sense of solidarity at Warren Central about this issue?
Yeah, you know, we definitely do take pride in the issues that's going on. So we just don't want to walk out. We want to do something. We want to use our voice. You know, we're not just about talking. We're about, you know, action. And especially recent tragedies that's happened to the high school, we want our voices to be heard in the safest manner as possible. So we feel that this is the most powerful technique to use.
Tim, how common is this? I mean, are we seeing incidents like this pretty much everywhere, or is Warren Central an isolated example?
Well, I'm familiar with a few different high schools, and my daughter goes to North Central High School on the north side of Indianapolis, and they do plan to walk out of the school, and they're allowed to at 10:17 tomorrow for 15 minutes, I believe.
Or at 10, right?
Or at 10, yeah, 10 to 10:17. Yeah, 10 to 10:17, that's correct. And so I don't know about other schools, and I was wondering about Jane. Have you heard?
Yeah, I was going to anticipate with Jane, how many calls are you getting about how much trouble can I get into for doing this?
Well, so across the country, we've gotten lots of inquiries. I'm proud to say that we haven't yet had an indication that in Indiana, the school systems are attempting to shut down student voices. We have heard of some instances across the country of that happening. But, from what I've read in the newspaper, from what I'm hearing here, schools are trying to, while keeping students safe, while observing their own internal policies, trying to make this a teachable moment and allow students to play their role as citizens, because that's what protest is about.
And we probably ought to watch, just in case there is someone who hasn't gotten the memo on this, walk through exactly what rights these students do have.
Right, yeah. So, students' First Amendment rights don't stop at the schoolhouse gate. That's out of some of the Supreme Court litigation that establishes that fact. But there are safety concerns. There are school educational concerns that make their rights a little bit confined. And so in this instance, schools must have content-neutral policies. So they may have a policy that prohibits or notes when students leave the classroom, but they can't enforce those policies in a way that is harsher because they disapprove of the content of the speech. And so in this instance, students can should work with administration, as Brandon's talked about, working with his. Know the policies, we urge both students and their parents to know the policies so that they can know if they want to go against a policy and risk punishment or having it be noted in your permanent record. They can do that knowingly, and everyone's expectations are free. As far as content of what the student can wear, schools can have uniform policies, but those policies must be content neutral. If you're allowed to wear a hat and it's allowed to say something on it, you can't be made to take it off because it's a pro-NRA message or a pro-ACLU message. So again, there's some confines, and then the general confine is that student speech cannot be disruptive to the educational purpose of the school. So, and most schools are mindful of that longstanding constitutional policy, and so they've crafted their policies on clothing, on absences, with in mind that it must be content neutral.
We are talking about student activism, guns, and gun violence here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I want to ask everybody, because this has become something big in that we haven't seen, at least on this issue, anything that touches many different places, what it is about this moment that has crystallized the concern in the way that it has. Brandon, I'm going to start with you on that.
Well, one thing that I can applaud the Parkland students for doing that I feel is the big reason why this blown up so fast all throughout the nation is that they are using their voices in such a positive manner that is touching all throughout the country. They're not afraid on speaking up. They're speaking up on a tragedy that's recently happened in their high school that they do not want to happen anywhere else throughout the country. And I applaud them so much for that, because they're actually using their voices and have the courage to not only speak up throughout the country, but speaking up to certain legislators and lawmakers on the issue. And not only that, but, you know, I feel that this is the perfect opportunity for students all throughout the nation to finally speak up. about youth violence as a whole, not just in schools, but day-to-day youth violence, especially here in Annapolis. You know, we've recently had a homicide high last year. You know, this should be a perfect opportunity to use this platform to speak up on our local social issues. So I feel that the students in Parkland using their voices so powerful is the reason why this is blown up. And I feel like that this is a perfect opportunity for the rest of the country to do so as well and join the bandwagon.
Jane.
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. And I think that it's a combination of factors going on, right? It's complicated. We've seen for the last year and a half a renewed sense of activism. And I think that comes from a couple of places. One, you know, as one protest is successful, people are inspired. People are see protests as a way to have their voices heard, their views heard. Second, I think that there's a sense that our elected officials aren't always reflecting what we believe the people want. And protests are an effective way to express that. And third, I would say that, and I'm very heartened by this, the renewed sense of activism in this country recognizes that our democracy is not limited to our participation in our democracy is not limited to just the voting booth, that we as citizens have a role every day, year round, to hold our government officials accountable. And so when a majority of Americans, for instance, in this instance, demand reasonable gun control laws, and they year after year fail to see it enacted on the local, state, or national level, then they're using their voices of activism and to make legislators and executives accountable and feel the burden of that pressure. And I just hope everybody keeps it up, because that's why we have the First Amendment protection of the right to protest.
Tim,
I have to say that another part of it is that we cannot normalize violence like school shootings. And I think that we've reached a point in this country that we need to realize we have to look at different ways to deal with not only people who are in trouble, but people who need help. Unfortunately, in our society, especially in schools, if Johnny doesn't know how to read, we teach Johnny how to read. But if Johnny doesn't know how to behave, we punish Johnny. If you look at a lot of the different incidents, even the one, the Veterans Home shooting just this last weekend and what happened down in Florida, you see exclusionary practices being implemented where people who need the most help, we push them away. We expel them from schools. We suspend them. We kick them out of programs. And so I think it's the students in Parkland have put out a call that we need to change things and we need to change the way we do go about things. But they've also brought attention to the fact that our politics are stuck in special interests and that the special interests are not representative of the whole people and even the majority of the people. And thank goodness we have a right to say something about that and to try to push the masses to recognize their role into changing things.
How much of this, Tim, you used for normalizing these sorts of incidents, and you actually, you know, representatives from the gun lobby don't use that word normalize, but they will argue that really this is something we should accept because it is the cost of freedom, the Second Amendment. How much of what is going on right now is a response to that kind of argument, the push for us just to accept this?
Well, the amount of guns that we have on the streets and how easy it is to get guns is a big issue. And also, so many teenagers feel as just like their parents that they need a gun to be able to just make it in this world and to have protection when they walk the streets. The problem is guns are the closest thing to thinking someone else dead. All you got to do is point and pull the trigger. And too many young people have guns, and too many people that shouldn't have them. So we have a proliferation of guns, but yet all of our kids need to learn how to be. They need to be safe, valued, and loved. And we need to have a culture that nurtures kids, and not this type of. A lot of our schools are using military discipline and other kinds of methods that just don't put respect and good communication at the forefront where it needs to be.
We are talking about student activism, guns, and gun violence today on No Limits. My guests are Brandon Warren, a student activist, goes to Warren Central. Must be nice to have a school named after you. Tim Nation from the Peace Learning Center, and Jane Henniger from the ACLU of Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Again, I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about student activism, guns, and gun violence in anticipation of the walkouts that are going to occur around the country tomorrow at 10 a.m. My guests are Brandon Warren. He is a student activist from Warren Central High School, Tim Nation, who is with the Peace Learning Center, and Jane Henniger, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Indiana. Again, I have to do my standard disclosure. I was one of Jane's predecessors at the ACLU of Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Chris has done, and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling because I have a question about what if schools are requiring students to write an essay in order to be able to participate? Our school district sent out a message that is allowing high schoolers to participate, but then we got another message from our son's middle school principal, all the middle school principals are requiring that middle schoolers have to write a one-page essay in order to be allowed to participate in any sort of protest.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Chris. We will throw that one to Jane, I suspect.
And I'm not sure that I know the answer. Again, I think what you need to do is look at the underlying policy under which they're requiring an essay. Again, schools don't normally allow students to walk out. So I would look at the policy, and if they're saying that there's are exceptions to leaving the classroom for exempted activities, then I imagine that they could put on a requirement for that exempted activity that students show that they're serious about the activity by writing something or something, other demonstrable evidence that how they want to use that time.
So part of me, and in my other life, obviously, I'm an educator. I'm wondering if it is something, and Tim, I'd like you to speak to this. I mean, is there an opportunity here to say, I suspect the motivation here is, okay, this is an experience. We have a moment here where people are really paying attention to this issue. We'd like to encourage students to do some reflection on what all this means so that it's not something that happens from 10 to 10, 17, and then they forget about it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a great idea as far as trying to learn about our political process and reflect on what the personal motivations are and what you can do to make change in the world. I think that's one of the positive aspects about this, because it is showing students that they do have a voice, and young people can step forward, and they don't even have to be 18 to vote, and they can have an impact in our politics. It's amazing what has happened in the last few years to see the activism and see, and you know, this goes back a few years. I mean, with the Black Lives Matter and other types of movements going across our country, we've seen a lot of youth activism, and I have a lot of confidence in today's young people. I see a lot of young people who are so sophisticated in their thoughts and their activism that are really out to change the world for a better. And us adults need to wake up and learn from these younger people because they have a lot to teach us.
Brandon, would you object to writing an essay about the experience tomorrow?
You know, I feel writing an essay is a very powerful move. You know, just I just know how it can positively affect the youth. It can, you know, educate them. But I do feel students, if they do want to walk out and they're already educated, then they should, you know, definitely have that right. But the essay just, you know, makes your thought process and your the overall education behind why you're walking out more valuable. Especially if you come from a certain school or certain background that's not too familiar with certain gun laws or certain, you know, gun issues. My school personally faced a huge gun issue last May. We lost two dear loved ones to a youth violence activity that started my activism and finding We Live. But, you know, that's our background. That's the reason why we know that we're never going to stop speaking up, especially with the tragedy being so recent. And not all schools have that same story, that same testimony.
Yeah, I think Brandon makes a great point here because I think schools can be creative about this, but they shouldn't put the burden just on the students.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of homework on both sides to be done, and schools can put in the work of providing the historical context, giving kids not only a sense of empowerment over this particular issue, but how they play into the course of our democracy, how this protest is an echo of past protests and what they were students were able to achieve. So I would make it a two-way street, and everybody needs to do their homework.
Right.
So, and I'll follow more on the reflection piece, and I'll start with, what do you hope will come out of the aftermath of this event tomorrow? What do you hope will be the result of all of this energy that's going to be devoted at getting people together to focus on one issue at the same moment in time?
You know, they use the hashtag never again, but I feel that hashtag is super powerful, but I don't want them to never forget. I don't want them to never forget not just this one situation, but all situations, all youth violence, especially in your certain area. I don't want the city of Indianapolis to forget the homicide record last year. I don't want the state of Florida to forget the Parkland shooting. I don't want Sandy Hook's to forget about their school shooting. I don't want the United States of America to forget the gun control issue that we face as a country. I don't want the entire body, the entire governed people of this great country to never forget the issues that we face revolving youth violence, gun violence, and school shootings as well.
We are talking about student activism, guns, and gun violence here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Jesse has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
As you indicated, the discussions on guns, the situation is complex. But I'm calling due to my expertise as a retired Navy SEAL and someone who's been teaching firearms training the last 3 years in this area. I have unique insight, and I use a unique technology of simulation. Having the experience I have, it is with great trepidation I would suggest folks use guns as a defensive technique in schools. It requires a lot of training, a lot of mental training. And what folks aren't privy to is the after-action reports. You know, even with trained individuals like law enforcement, 80 to 90% of rounds fired under stress are missed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these things need to be considered. For that reason, I offer training without handguns to prepare individuals on a different level drawing on my experiences as a SEAL in the military under high stress, the way we trained to be prepared is a methodology that will be helpful in the immediate time, right?
Mm-hmm.
But reflecting back on the initial comment, it's a complex situation, right? Some of our kids are on various drugs, right? The fathers aren't always part of the family unit. The dropout rate in Indianapolis is around 70%. It's a complex issue. It requires intelligent, complex answers. And I just wanted to give my two cents there on the firearms thing. We really need to carefully consider that and really have stringent training standards for that.
As someone obviously who deals with guns, does it concern you or bother you that so many folks who seem to represent the gun owners or seek to represent the gun owners take these pretty strident and extreme stances here? You know, their response isn't that we should talk about training as a requirement for owning a firearm or for using one. It is, in response to this, we ought to just arm teachers and put them in schools or armed guards. Do you think that there are ways that intelligent people could sit down and figure out ways to preserve gun owners' rights and yet also make our schools and our streets and our churches safer than they have been?
Absolutely. And it's having that honest conversation by looking at well-intended individuals and saying, well, with that right comes great responsibility. And the general public isn't privy to the potential that happens when you bring a firearm into a situation. And that's the crux of the issue here, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of detailed information available to add to the conversation to make it an honest conversation. And so that's what I like. That's what I try to instill in folks. I look at them, and most of them who come to me have already made that decision, right? They know they're not ready, and they want to be ready and prepared. And so the concept of it is your right, but it's also your responsibility to know what the ramifications are and what your limitations are, right? So the metaphor I use, it's like playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
Using a handgun is just like learning how to play golf. You wouldn't go to Golf Galaxy 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and then think you're ready for a PGA tournament. So somehow our societal norm is that you can go to the range for an hour a week or a month and think that you're ready for a life and death situation, or even go to one or two classes. And I'm here to tell you, you know, as high, you know, special operators, we're sustaining our training constantly, right? And that's a complex, when I say training, it's complex. It's not just shooting. It's mental drills, situation awareness, all these things that go into it. It's a psychological game as well as a physical game.
Thanks very much for the call and for joining and sharing your perspective, Jesse. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So this gets to this point because I think we've all kind of alluded to the fact that, people are expressing their will. The chances, though, that that's going to, you know, manifest itself in any kind of change here in Indiana are relatively small. I think something like out of the 100 members of the Indiana House of Representatives, 87 of them, if I recall correctly, have A-plus ratings from the National Rifle Association, more than a majority of the Indiana Senate, which means that, while the people are calling for one kind of conversation, the system is responding with another one, right, Tim?
That's right. I have been in the legislature when different gun laws have been debated, and I can remember being in the Senate chamber once when Johnny Nugent talked about a possible ban of guns inside the state house, and he asked senators to raise their hands if they were packing heat.
Yeah.
He said he had to
remember that moment.
He had to walk to the circle every night at 10 o'clock and how dangerous it was. And so at least 20 of the 50 senators raised their hands.
And there would have been more if they'd all been on the floor.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. We are talking about student activism, guns, and gun violence. We're joined now by another student activist, Max Siegel. Max, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm also with Zev Burton as well.
Oh, you are. Okay. Okay, well, tell us which school you go to and what the plans are for tomorrow.
We go to Brabazz Jesuit in Indianapolis. Tomorrow, we've organized a student walkout tomorrow, and it's been supported mainly by some of the clubs. The clubs that we have involved are Black Student Union, Young Democrats, Young Republicans, our Social Justice Club, and our Gay Straight Alliance Club. And we're planning to walk out at 10 a.m. tomorrow. And we're going to have some guys from each of the clubs, and they're going to read some statements of what we think that needs to be done to improve this current situation that we're all involved in.
It's a big idea to try and show that there's unanimous agreement across all students, whether they be Democrats, Republicans, Independents, to come together and say, we want safer schools, because in reality, our biggest fear coming to school should be a math test, not our lives.
Well, I will say I'm of a vintage that, yes, math tests were my greatest fear, but and still can get me into the cold sweats. Jane, I want to ask, we probably ought to make this point, too, that the guidelines you talked about apply to public schools, but private schools operate by somewhat different rules, right? Independent
right,
schools.
Right, the Constitution doesn't reach into the private schools.
So, and guys, is Brabazz supporting this activity, all of it, the school administration?
Yeah, we've actually been working with the school administration, and they are switching around a small part of the schedule to help get as many students come out to the walkout as possible. They've been incredibly supportive of us, and they stand with us.
We have gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Lisa. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Lisa writes, John, always enjoy your programs, but especially appreciating today's. Thanks for hosting Brandon Warren and for having Jane Henniger of the ACLU input there on clarifying what the students' rights are, as well as Tim Nation's input. This is such a potentially significant and change-causing time in our history, and I hope that our youth do lead the way to positive change. So many negative things have been said about today's youth, but what an amazing thing it would be to see these same youth bring about the likes of change we haven't seen since the civil rights movement. So, guys from Brabazz, I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to ask Brandon, we're getting close to a break here, so I'll ask you to be somewhat tight in your answers. Do you see this as a seminal moment where your generation really is coming together? I'll start with the guys from Brabazz and then go to Brandon.
I definitely think that this is a monumental time for us, and it's kind of like this first time for our generation to step out and take a hold of some of these issues in our country. And I definitely think that this is a very important time when we look back 40, 50 years from now.
Brandon.
Yes, as a whole, throughout the nation, I definitely do feel that this is a perfect opportunity for the youth to come together, and I do feel like that this we're fulfilling it, but we have higher expectations for ourselves. For me personally, I definitely do feel that this is a proof that, you know, from where I come from, Far East Side, Minneapolis, that I'm bigger than what people would say. You know, if homicide rates would be at a certain level out there, or they'll be advertised more out there than other areas, it shows that, you know, people from within my community, we care just as well as everybody else throughout the country.
Jane, you want to add something, or you?
No, I'll leave it to these student activists. They're awesome.
So, Brandon, I'll ask this, and I know it's a little bit tight, but what do you think is going to be success for tomorrow's event?
I feel that what will be the success part is the way it's publicized. You know, we kind of touched on this earlier, but there's so much that the youth is negatively publicized on, but this is something so positive and so powerful. And I feel that if the adults allow the students to lead the way and support them in the utmost respect, then that would be the most powerful thing.
We are talking today about student activism, guns, and gun violence. on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. We're talking with some inspiring young people today, and a couple of us of more recent vintage, more mature vintage here on No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about student activism, guns, and gun violence here on No Limits. My guests are Brandon Warren, a student activist. We've got Max Siegel from Rebuff as well. Brandon is a student at Warren Central. Tim Nation from the Peace Learning Center. And Jane Henniger with the ACLU of Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimits@wfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Jane, I was talking with Jesse, who was one of our earlier callers, we talked a bit about whether people of good faith could find a way to curtail some of the gun violence in this country and still respect gun owners' individual rights. Could you speak to what the law says regarding this right now?
Yeah, the current state on the Second Amendment is guided by a decision, Heller versus the District of Columbia, in which the late Justice Scalia wrote the opinion. And he established that while there is a right to bear arms, personal right to bear arms, that right can be reasonably regulated by government. And he gave examples of what that reasonable regulation might look like and the point to which it would serve. It has to serve a legitimate purpose related to public health, public safety, and you know, he cited examples of regulation that would be permissible that have been existed in the past. And he even cited ones that existed at the time of the founding of our government, the bearing of unusual and dangerous weapons. And so, you know, there's plenty of precedent to suggest that there's a lot of room for regulation of guns before we get to challenging people's constitutional rights. And I'll just put a footnote from our perspective. You know, in that reasonable regulation, of course, we want to observe due process rights, protection against unreasonable search and seizure, and privacy rights. But we as a country have a lot of leeway to enact the kind of regulation that these students are asking for. And again, as they've said, I hope adults listen to those reasonable requests.
We are joined now by Andrew McCauley. He's a school counselor at George Washington High School. Andrew, what are you hearing from the students at George Washington?
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Certainly.
A wide variety of concerns and opinions regarding gun violence and school safety. Kind of an overarching theme that's been expressed by a number of students. They're just very highly troubled by the frequency in which these gun violences are kind of affecting the school communities. They kind of mentioned how they're growing up as part of a generation where these tragedies are becoming more and more common, and just really a lot of frustration with their voices not being heard, even though it's students like them or themselves who are most often affected by the tragedies.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Stephanie that tries to take this, in a more, I would say, supportive, therapeutic conversation. Stephanie writes, and by the way, if anyone else wants to join the conversation via Facebook, they can find us at No Limits WFYI. Stephanie writes, "I totally get where the kids are coming from to honor those students and staff that passed. I wonder how many of them are actually in it for that reason. My thought is, after this walkout, please spend some time with people you generally wouldn't. I'm sure some of these kids on this walkout could be bullies, so that is what is bothering me. During lunch, have these kids go sit and talk with someone they usually wouldn't. Go talk to that bookworm. Go talk to emo kid. Go talk to that girl in the wheelchair. Go talk with a kid that has a mental disability. Get out of their cliques and go friend someone. A lot of these kids that are the shooters are the loners or the weird kids. Maybe someone just needs to be acknowledged. Andrew is a school counselor. Is there validity to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was actually one of the more impressive things that I heard from our students here, is that they really feel a role and a responsibility to reach out to that student who may otherwise feel isolated here at the school. And they think that they can do a part in preventing this just by reaching out and being more inclusive to some of the students whom we feel like they're on the outside or not part of the larger school community.
We are talking about guns, student activism, and gun violence here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Leslie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to add to the conversation. I have three sons that attend Bishop Chatard High School here in Indianapolis. And Mr. Johansson, their principal, sent out a letter last week informing the parents that they were going to allow the children who would like to leave and then have a group prayer service. And the importance of that to me is that we are always leaning on our children to be leaders and to make the right choice and to use their voice. And we often squash that because we're the parents or we're the administrators, and we're afraid of what they might come up with, these real amazing students. And this is giving them the opportunity to have an opinion and show it without putting themselves in a whole lot of danger.
Thanks very much for the call and for the comment. Is that Brandon and Max? I'll throw this question to you. There's got to be a certain satisfaction. I mean, you do have the entire country's attention right now.
Right.
What does that speak to for you?
You know, it shows that we have the support, that we have the country's support, actually caring for the youth and listening to our voice. So many youth do not feel empowered to speak up on certain situations like this just because they don't feel that they're listened to and that their opinions are mattered. In hindsight, your opinions do matter. I encourage all my youth to speak up on this situation because it speaks volume. You know, we all have experience within the schools. We are living it today. So speak up on the issues that's in your school revolving this situation. If you do feel like you're a loner kid or lonely or, you know, feeling some type of, you know, mental illness where you would call something like this, then I feel like that it's not only the student's job to go and speak to them and, you know, try to lead them to the correct route, but it's also the school's job. We have to do better as schools throughout the country, supporting our youth, counselors, administrators, teachers, school advocates, etc.
Max, your thoughts?
I can go ahead and take this one. I think the importance of it here, and I've heard this a lot in the 20 or so minutes we've been on the call, is that it's a multifaceted approach and that this conversation doesn't end after the walkout tomorrow. The goal of this walkout is to continue the conversation, is to ensure that the media or people covering these events aren't sidetracked and they don't move on to what's coming next, to the next hot topic. We want to keep our school safe, and that's the pressing issue for us as we sit here in school.
I've gotten a message from a listener named John via Facebook. John writes, students absolutely should be active and involved in this discussion, contrary to popular opinion. In the last 2 years of my teaching, I had some of the best and brightest students I had in my 43 years. We have also gotten via email a different point of view that speaks to this from a listener named Ben. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, I'd like to see change too, but I find it reckless for schools to sanction protests. No one is silencing these students. Write a letter to your legislators, gather and submit a petition among your club members or peers. Write a letter to the editor, blog about your political views. Kids today have more of a voice than ever. Walking out during the school day and taking time away from curriculum isn't the solution. How about a civics lesson and how things get changed? Use your energy and within the bounds of the system which we operate. Tax dollars support schools, and you're going to use that money to have kids walk out of the classroom. No thanks. I'll throw that one to Jane first, but I'd like to hear Brandon's thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I think the last viewer or listener brings an interesting point, because protest shouldn't be smothered taken away. It shouldn't take away the power of protest. I don't know how to articulate this. Yes, I agree with the last point that schools should more emphasize the content of the speech, the power of the speech, and how it fits into our civic fabric, and less accommodate it to the point of making it meaningless. Part of protest is that it's a risk to the speaker. And, a protest in an open parking lot away from all fear, I'm not talking about in the school situation, is not a protest. A protest needs to be seen. It needs to be felt. And so I do think that there is a fine line of smothering a protest and taking away the edge, I would guess. The students and anybody protesting, it's not just the act of speaking. It's being heard and inciting action. And I think that's what these students want more than pats on the back.
Tim, we've actually gotten a little note here that already responds to this. This is a great thing about this show and this audience, is they carry on the discussion even off the air. But one person's arguing, in effect, that this is a kind of civics lesson.
Yes.
In and of itself. Can you speak to the value of that?
Well, yes. And it's interesting, too, to think about where protest fits. Martin Luther King wrote Kingian Nonviolence. And you're first, as a group of people, supposed to figure out what you're interested in, then what kind of policies you want to promote and how you want policies to change. Meet with leaders, try to get those policies to change. But if you can't, then that's the time to do protest and civic action. I do think we see that the students have looked at different legislation and different things that they want. And we have seen that a lot of leaders are unwilling to go there. So as far as Kingian nonviolence goes, this is an appropriate time to protest. But it's also, as you say, and some of the listeners, a great learning opportunity. We're talking about 17 minutes on a Wednesday and in a 180-day school calendar. So I would agree that, and I would discourage this happening weekly, monthly, or but this is something that is a national movement, and it kind of reminds me of back when Hands Across America or something like that. It's a chance for everybody to participate.
Well, and I guess I speak as a teacher here and think, boy, if we could get students this engaged on any public question every week, I'm not sure I would discourage that, right, Brandon?
All right.
So we've gotten a couple, an email and a Facebook message from Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, saying, complimenting Brandon on his work and saying that that they support your efforts tomorrow. I just want to acknowledge those. Those are from Alexa and Erica. We are talking about student activism, guns and gun violence in America. Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, what I wanted to add, first I want to say I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they go off to school each day, and I hold them extra tight before they do, just because I'm nervous, with more and more of these events occurring. And what I wanted to add is I own a cell phone repair store, and it really surprises me that, phones over time have gotten smarter and smarter. There's more of these measures that lock them down. It can't be used if it gets in the wrong hands. You can tell where someone is at with GPS. And with guns, it's so ingrained in our culture. I feel like taking guns away isn't going to happen, or it's going to be a long, long time from now. But what could be done is technologies, be added to these weapons
where, you know, only the user can use them, you know, with touch ID sensors, or, you know, if places like schools are part of networks, obviously they have, you know, internet, and if these guns had to be, you know, linked, you know, to the internet, you know, it could easily be traced that if you have a no gun zone, that someone takes the gun into one of these zones, it would, you know, it would alert those who needed to be alerted. You know, so people can have their guns, they can do whatever they want with them, as long as they're in a, not going into these non-gun zones that were connected to the internet. I just don't see why, you know, this couldn't happen. What are your thoughts?
Well, thanks very much for the call and the, sure. The question. Is that that's one of the areas, I think, that when we've had gun shows before, David Orentlicker, who's a constitutional law professor, has advanced that the technology hasn't caught up with this discussion. Jane, I mean, are those legally practical ideas?
I mean, you'd have to look at the privacy concerns. You'd have to make sure that the law is being, whatever the laws are, they're applied evenly. And if certain people are monitored or excluded from possession, that that's done on a basis that reflects a reasonable, legitimate government purpose, and people are provided with due process.
Okay. We're getting close on time here, so I'm going to ask first the guys from Brebeuf, what are you going to be thinking about at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning?
I guess the biggest thing that I'll be thinking about will be like the most recent victims these past 17. And then also on that, I will be thinking of a lot of like a different legislation that can be passed here at Brebeuf. We got together with some of the clubs and we all have certain bills that we support, and we support stuff such as like the gun violence restraining order, Manchin Toomey bill, like stuff like similar to that, to fix like the gun show loophole, like the straw purchasing loophole, like the fix NICS bill, stuff similar to that, are things that we collectively as a student body support, and that's going to be what's mainly on our minds tomorrow. Where do we go from here?
Okay, Brandon, I'm going to give you the last word. I think that's appropriate. What are you going to be thinking about? Yeah. At 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I'll be thinking about all the lives lost in Florida, but also throughout the country. Last May, I lost my friend, Dijon Anderson. Tomorrow, I would not only be thinking about, but I would be representing my true testimony towards youth violence as a whole, my city, as youth violence as a whole, and also this great country.
And I think that I don't think anyone's going to top that as a last word here. I would like to thank all of my guests for what has been not just a provocative but a thoughtful conversation about a difficult issue. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions and comments and for carrying on a thoughtful discussion as well. We will be back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about the Me Too movement. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.